Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. I am joined by Joe Cook, and we have a meaty and fascinating topic ahead of us because Joe has been ruminating about this for well over a year. I don't know. The first time he communicated about this was over a year ago and wrote some about it. And since then, he got me thinking, and we decided, and Joe is taking the lead on this, and then now he got me infected with it as well. So now I've been researching it. Joe wanted to talk about the most important games in Texas football history that happened at DKR. Now, at first blush, you would think, well, this is an easy assignment, and it's probably been tons of important games. The hardest thing is winnowing down. Actually, winnowing them down is not easy, but the shocker of it is how many big games Texas won on the road, at neutrals, of course, against OU, in conference title games or in bowls. And actually, how infrequently, particularly recently, that Texas has had massive home games with huge implications. So, Joe, I wonder, before we go into this, you could talk about the distinction, if there is a distinction with a difference, between the most important games versus the best games.
Yeah, so this all started because I thought, hey, this is going to be the 100-year anniversary of Memorial Stadium. Opened in 1924, dedicated at the A&M game. Lost the opening, won the dedication. Obviously, DKR has been renamed from War Memorial Stadium to Texas Memorial Stadium to Darrell K. Royal Texas Memorial Stadium. Went from being in honor of veterans of and the fallen dead of World War One to the fallen dead from the state of Texas in all wars. And quick side note, if you ever get the chance to walk the north end zone, the outside, there are plaques from every Southwest Conference school, the old entablature, which is honored the dead from UT or maybe tech, the state of Texas is there on the northwest corner. It's cool stuff. It's worth the history lesson, worth a quick reflection. But 100 years, like you mentioned, some of the games that have gone on at Texas, it's been an interesting mix just because the biggest games are not in Austin for the most part. And in the case of what I wrote about on Inside Texas the other day, if there is a number one team playing at Memorial Stadium, it's usually Texas. And obviously higher-ranked games, games against high-ranked opponents typically are what like drives this deal. But I feel like there is an obvious distinction between best and most important. And two games, I think, really encapsulate this. Number one, 1990 versus U of H. That was a great game. Everybody, you know, there are a lot of people that call it the best atmosphere ever at DKR. Beat that Houston team. You got, man, his name escapes me, Wally Pryor telling that idiot to get off the goalpost. Great moment on a team that, as you mentioned, did good things but didn't do great things. They got their butt whipped by Miami, right, in the Cotton Bowl. Another game that encapsulates this is 2016 Notre Dame. Everybody who was there loved that game. I was there. I was sitting in the upper deck. I loved that game. The image of Swoops diving across the goal line, the back and forth nature, the swing of emotion, that's what makes college football fun. And of course, that was a fantastic game. It didn't mean much. Texas went 5-7 that year. Notre Dame, I think, went 4-8. It was kind of the blip on the Brian Kelly radar. But that game did not have any consequences at all. It was just, the only consequence was the punchline delivered by Joe Tessitore. And I know he gets asked about that a lot and he tries to play it off, but that's what people remember. Those were great games. And we can go through a couple more. I have a list. You've got a list. And you have some that you think maybe should merit inclusion on the important games. But important games really and truly altered the direction of Texas football, or were such a historical achievement that they stand alone, even if that team was 8-3, or even if they didn't win the Southwest Conference or the Big 12, even if they weren't national title contenders. There are games on this list that I put together, and I put some thought into it, and I got some feedback from Inside Texas members about it to kind of get the big group to winnow down. But there are more games that their quality could be argued, but their lasting impact is far greater than Texas being back or Texas shocking the nation.
Yeah, so I would be remiss if I didn't comment on the Nighty U of H game. You nailed it in that at the time, we felt that this was one of the most important games. It was number three, Houston. They were coming in with the run and shoot. It was a novel offense. No one could solve it. I mean, U of H was beating people 77-3 and running up the score in the late fourth quarter. They'd humiliated Texas multiple times. And I can tell you, I was in attendance at that game. It, to this date, it is the most raucous, most intense, most angry Texas crowd I've ever seen. I mean, no one sat the entire game. People were jumping up and down on the bleachers and screaming the entire game. David Klingler, the quarterback for U of H, could not hear. They couldn't check. And then Texas, when they saw that, just started blitzing. Brian Jones and the Texas front, which was very good, all NFL guys, started just getting loose. And then on offense, Texas physically battered them running the ball and then had some big plays through the air with Peter Gardner throwing to the Cash Twins. But at the time, when I left, Joe, I was like, this is it. The worm is turned. This is an important game. And Texas had a great year that year, other than the Miami blemish.
There is another honorable mention is the A&M game from that year, because that was during the era where R.C. Slocum was I think it was R.C., but either R.C. or Cheryl was just kicking Texas ass left and right. In 1990, Texas finally gets one over on the Aggies. So there are multiple from that year. And I'm looking through the honorable mention list. There are some 2000s games. The only other pre-2000 game was the 1984 game against Auburn, where Texas won against Bo Jackson in the height of Bo Jackson's powers. But yeah, that was, like you said, that game stands in the category along with Notre Dame 2016, 2018 USC, 2022 Alabama, and 2012 West Virginia as just like raucous crowds, crazy crowds, most energetic crowds I've been a part of or seen, but mattering little or also just ending up in losses.
Yeah, I mean, if Texas didn't win the game, it doesn't merit inclusion. So similar except to the Bo one. Jackson. Go ahead.
We'll get to that one.
Let's get to it now.
Well, it's down the list on the actual most important games.
Okay. You didn't want to hit the honorable mentions first?
No. So the other three honorable mentions I had were, I'll go least we need to talk about to most we need to talk about. 2009, Texas Tech. Kind of at the a year after losing to Crabtree, kind of solidifies Texas as an obvious national title contender if they weren't before then. Rock, just a great crowd. Game day was there. Night game with the A squad on ESPN. And you get the eternal lasting image of Sergio Kendall committing, you know, aggravated assault on Taylor Potts. I think that was just a great game that help push Texas into the obvious national title contender category, as they would have, of course, been with the senior Colt McCoy, Jordan Shipley, a pretty good defense. The other one that is a quick mention, 2008 Missouri, as part of that gauntlet of, you know, going from Oklahoma. There's one more for Oklahoma State, Missouri, and then Texas Tech. Colt McCoy has one of the best games by a Texas quarterback ever against another quality quarterback in Chase Daniel. I think he starts like, what, 22 of 26, and that may be shorting him a little bit. Just goes crazy. But the one that deserves more mention and was close to, I think, getting in the 10 most important games was the 2004 comeback against Oklahoma State, where Texas is down, you know, looking at the box score. I think they're down 35-7 at halftime, and they like barely got that seven, if I remember correctly.
No. So here's what happened. Texas was down 35-7, and then Vince Young had a last end of half drive to cut it to 35-14. And the Texas fans and the Texas players ran off the field after that touchdown, actually elated And you could see the confidence because the crowd was going nuts in a negative way before that play. Because Texas just didn't want to, they didn't even show up to the game. They weren't even trying. And that was obvious. And Oklahoma State was just outplaying and outcoaching them. Mac Brown goes into halftime. I've talked to players who were there and he said, we will win this game 42-35. And they come out and of course they win 56-35 with like one of the most spectacular halves of football played in Texas history. And that 49 point margin, so Oklahoma State going from 28 up to losing by 21 is the greatest swing in a college football game, I think in history still. I don't think it's the overall biggest comeback. I think someone came back from down 31, but like still an amazing game. I think I would include it in the top 10 games of all time or most important, because that game did actually have meaning, because that was a very good Texas team that would go on to almost play for the national title. And frankly, we're kind of screwed out of it. I think a lot of people would have liked to have seen that Texas team play for the national title. I don't know. What do you think about how does like a record setting game compare also in terms of importance? In other words, so like we're going to have Ricky Williams included on this list.
Yeah.
And that game was important. I mean, Texas was back. That heralded basically the beginning of the Mac Brown run. But how do we factor a 49-point swing in a football game in a season that was important? I mean, that was a really good Texas football team. Their only hickey was against OU.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of those. But I think I wonder if that's one of the first games that really gave Vince Young the confidence to be Vince Young. Because it's that game is in November. It's a couple weeks after the Oklahoma game. And if I remember right, was that the 12-0 or the 14-3 Oklahoma game?
12-0.
Yeah. So
humiliating. Embarrassing.
Technically, Vince doesn't start that game. I think Chance Mock does. Chance Mock starts that, right? Or is that 03 I'm thinking of?
No.
Then Vince started that game. There we go. Yeah, Vince started that game. Doesn't go well, scoreless. No credit to Bob Stoops and that defense. That's what it was. It was the let Vince be Vince game, or that came shortly thereafter with Missouri, I think. And then you see Oklahoma State get run up for 49 points in the second half, and Vince is Vince. So it's a tremendously important game, obviously, in the history of Vince Young and those mid 2000s teams, and it's probably the only 2000s game that really contended for a spot. I think that it, along with another game we'll talk about in the introduction of an innovative offense, are two massive moments. But I think there are some more moments, and obviously a lot of these are going to be from the 60s and 70s that really had more of an impact and helped Texas become Texas, as opposed to at that point where Texas had been winning 10 games. They had been contending for the conference title, played for one and lost the opportunity at it. I think that was a result of some of the games that it was building on back in the 60s, but obviously still hugely important. I guess if we made a top 11, I think that would be a good pick for number 11 on this list where I have subjective control.
Yeah. All right. Well, you could cede your subjective control for a moment. I have some more runner-ups and worth mentions. I wouldn't include the Taylor Potts game. It was a good, entertaining game, and there's an iconic moment, but there's been plenty of those. And if you're looking at the kind of a star power game, Bo Jackson in 84 is a great pick, because Bo Jackson's like an all-timer, and it was a very hyped up game. Texas wins a close one. I think it was 35-27. And actually, they did a good job on Bo. Jerry Gray had a very famous tackle on him. But in 1981, Texas plays Miami. Jim Kelly is the quarterback. And Miami is becoming Miami. They're about to start their run. And that Hurricane team finished number 8 overall. Jim Kelly, as I said, was the quarterback. Texas wins a hard-fought 14-7 win. Kind of shuts down that Miami offense. And that Texas team went 10-1-1. They actually finished the year ranked second in the country. This was 1981. And the reason they finished second in the country with a 10-1-1 record, a loss and a tie, is because their opponents that year were incredible. They just played a murderer's row schedule. And I can tell you at the time that that Jim Kelly game was a pretty big deal. And I think in retrospect, it's actually grown, because in 2 years, Miami's going to win the national title. And then for the next 20 years, they are the dominant team of college football. Not even close. So that was an interesting game, kind of like Bo Jackson. In 82, Texas beat Arkansas 33-7. Arkansas team was number six in the country. A really good team that had big aspirations. I got to bring up 1995. I was at Texas. I was a senior. And Virginia was really good that year. They had a bunch of NFL dudes. Texas won that game 17-16. Phil Dawson kicks a game-ending 50-yard field goal into the wind. And he had missed two field goals earlier from 53 and 57. And he kicked directly in the wind, and the ball barely cleared the bar. It was an amazing win. But kind of like you said, what was the importance of that game?
Hey, they won the Southwest Conference that year.
They did.
So that's Virginia.
Virginia was a non-con, right? So right. What's the importance of that game? Not super high, but it was one of the most exciting and best games. I think we got to talk about 99 Nebraska, though, is an important game. Texas wins 24-20. That Nebraska team finishes third in the rankings. And from 95 to about 2001, Nebraska was the football team. They were the bully of college football. They join a league with Texas with reservations. And then Texas proceeds to take their lunch money for the next decade. And this was the start of it. Now, that Texas team ended up disappointing in 99, right? They lose their last three, including an Arkansas Cotton Bowl where they didn't even show up.
Yeah.
But to me, that was a changing of the guard in the Big 12 and telling Nebraska, hey, you're no longer the bully. And we're going to do what we want to you. And so for the next decade, Texas beats them in close games, and they also beat them in games where they just physically pummel them. So I think that game is up there, not just in terms of quality of play, but also importance. Major Applewhite was the quarterback. Texas wins 24-20. Repeated post routes to Mike Jones is what I remember about that game, the unheralded tight end who ran about a 5.0 40, but had beautiful hands, and Major kept throwing it in there. And then I'd add one thing. I mean, not recency bias here, but I actually think it's one of the most important games in Texas history. Texas wins 33-30 in overtime last year against Kansas State with a goal line stand, a great game with a backup quarterback starting. And that preserves a Texas season where we go to the first ever playoff in Texas history. So I think that's one of the most 10 important games. I think that's a huge game in terms of importance. And also the game itself was a really good game, a thrilling game. Mm-hmm. The bitter part of me also loves the 57-7 destruction of Texas Tech, sort of the final Big 12 game in that stadium. Joey McGuire runs his mouth, all the nonsense, and Texas just absolutely paced them, and the crowd is ecstatic. I'm not going to say that it ranks up with importance with some of the games we're about to talk about, but it sure felt good. I was there. It sure felt good. Any thoughts on what I brought up?
The cool part about that Kansas State game, and I think as college football fans, we appreciate Gus Johnson on the call, makes everything about three or four times as exciting. That last play, I'm going to remember Ryan Watts and Jaron Thompson trading off that route forever. Like, that's how you play defense. Oh, yeah. And then, you know, Byron Murphy, Tavondre Sweat, Baron Sorrell doing their thing like that. Yeah, that I think of importance as far as Texas achieving something. That's the game that stands out from the home slate just because it was pretty light during the most recent season. I really can't. There wasn't a ton during the Herman era. Obviously, not much during the Strong era. To your point about Nebraska, that is one of four games against top five opponents at home for Texas during the Big 12 era, and only one of two Big 12 games from that era. So obviously, important there. And you know, like you said, with the it was still 2 years away with Eric Crouch, oddly enough, his Heisman being the last gasp of Nebraska as a dominant force in college football. But still a big deal at the time, because in 99, you know, they were coming off the they end up winning the Big 12 title and beating Texas that year for it. So ended up being a little fleeting, but still a big thing at the time. But I like my 10. I like my 10, and I'm ready to get into them.
All right. You're ready to defend your thesis against the committee. Hey, in these big games, we're going to talk about big plays and big players. If you're in the market for a mortgage, you need a big-time player on your side, and that guy is Gabe Winslow. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. That's 832-557-1095. He is based in the great city of Houston, a city that spawned precocious Joe Cook. He's wearing a Texans hat right now. Good job, Joe. That last year must have been just pure invigoration to Texas fans everywhere. Texans fans and Texas fans. But Gabe is a proud Houstonite, but he helps people all over the great state of Texas. And also, he's licensed in several other states. So even if you're a Longhorn who's in exile, as I am, he may be able to help you. And so give him a call. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Really sharp guy, really good dude, massive Longhorn fan, and phenomenal at what he does. Go read his Google reviews. He's got like 145, and they're all five-star reviews with like four paragraphs detailing all the amazing work that he did. And I know I've gotten awesome feedback from the podcast listeners. If you are in Central Texas and need to buy a house, call Laura Baker. She just helped out our pal Ian Boyd, our colleague Ian Boyd. And he really was appreciative of her services. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. She is an award-winning member of the Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. And she can help you anywhere in Central Texas. Really good at what she does. And tell you what, if you buy a house without the right realtor, you are making a very bad decision, because that is a significant thing that I think far too many people entrust to the friend of a friend or the lady who lives down the street. And this is a pretty significant, serious financial decision. So in your mortgage and in your home purchase, go with the best. Don't go with someone you happen to know. That doesn't always work out very well for you. So all of these games we're about to discuss, Joseph, you and I know as Longhorn historians and Longhorn devotees, let's talk about what you believe are the 10 best or most important, not the best, I'm sorry, 10 most important home games in Longhorn history. A few we might gloss over because, frankly, we don't know much or we didn't see it happen. So anything from 1940, we're not going to have a huge contribution, but we will tell you its significance and you'll understand why it made the list. So start us off with the first that you want to discuss. This is not in any particular order. It's just the 10 most important. Bring it, Joe.
All right. I think we know that number two and number one, the last two we talk about are number two and number one. But until we get there, I think these are any particular order.
Fair enough. That's fair.
All right. So the first one is 1976. Arkansas. It is Darrell K. Royal's last game as a head coach. It is also Frank Broyles' last game as a head coach. Lot of different, you know, emotions going on there. Not a great season for Texas. You know, 5-5-1 doesn't do a whole lot. They entered the season ranked number 7. They started the year by losing to Boston College in Chestnut Hill. They squeaked by North Texas. And they ended up tying Oklahoma up and down. They lose to Tech. They lose to Houston. They lose to A&M. And at the end of the year, they play Arkansas at home. Another team that in the Southwest Conference was not doing well and, you know, just in general was not doing well that season. And Texas wins that game pretty easy. They jump out to a 10-0 halftime lead. Arkansas only just scores, two very late touchdowns, or one late touchdown and two field goals. pretty easy win. Earl Campbell is on that team. But it's not so much that they beat a middling Texas team, beats a middling Arkansas team, but it's the end of an era. It's the end of the Daryl K. Royal era, the man who had brought Texas football from what was already a position of strength with coaches like Dana Bible and, you know, the host of others in the post-war era and even the pre-war era, brings Texas from a position of strength and national title contender on occasion to consistent national title contender, and, you know, leaves as the undisputed best coach in the history of the program and retires early, retires at age 52, probably when he had a lot of years left in front of him. I can't remember Frank Broyles' age, but it's just marking the end of an era, sending a coach off, obviously, with some degree of, you know, we wish you were doing better, but we thank you for everything you've done, and starts the next stage in Longhorn football under Fred Akers. And I think, just a good side note, that win ensures that Daryl Royal has zero under 500 seasons, not just at Texas, but across his whole career.
Yeah, and very quick to hit DKR and his importance. 167, 47, and 5 at Texas, three national titles. He also presided over the Texas program at a time when TV finally married to college football, that product. Well into my childhood, I listened to many Texas games on the radio. Now, that doesn't mean that there wasn't college football on TV. Of course it was. It's just that it was very limited. Mm-hmm. However, there was the game of the week. And through the 60s and early 70s, Texas was arguably, along with Notre Dame, the most watched, most sort of nationally followed program. James Street going around in other cities outside of Texas was like being around, you know, a guy from, you know, the Beatles. It was a big deal. And this was really the birth of television, and the birth of mainstream popular audience watching college football and sports in general. Because before that, baseball really utterly dominated the mind share. If you go back 100 years, you as a man who was a sporting man, you followed boxing, baseball, and horse racing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those things have changed. And so this DKR came in an era where this was happening. DKR also came in an era where you had integration. Texas was a Southern school that abided by the social mores and folkways of that time. And he was part of integrating the University of Texas football team. Not until 1970, right? Officially with Julius Whittier. I think you could argue him just being present on the sideline in any home game was the most important game, because the integration of the black athlete changes all of football, all of college football, and certainly Texas football, and changes our society. And remember, black students hadn't been integrated at the University of Texas only 14 years prior, 1956.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a really massive sort of thing. So, you know, DKR presided over that as well. And that was a very important shift. So DKR, the greatest coach in Texas history, still. I'd like to see that surpassed by Steve Sarkisian. But also at a time when a lot of really interesting and important stuff was happening, he presided over that and was the guiding hand. And I think that also needs to be acknowledged as part of his legacy.
Just kind of looking at who was on that roster, coaches roster, you have Jack Burns, Mike Campbell, Ken Dabbs, Spike Dykes, David McWilliams, the yep. non-wrestling Pat Patterson. Obviously, you have Earl Campbell, Rick Ingram, Lamb Jones, Ham Jones, just so many, David Yarbrough, Brad Shearer, Tim Campbell, Raymond yep. Claiborne, a lot of great players in Texas history. Russell Erksleben, one of the two, three-time All-Americans in Texas history. So a lot of great players were on that sideline. And despite that team kind of being middling, they set up a great era to come under Fred Akers, ushered in by Earl Campbell the next season, obviously, with his Heisman campaign.
Okay, so Joe, this isn't in order, but I think for us to properly set up a bunch of the games. I want to knock out 1950 SMU and 1940 A&M. Probably not a ton to say about that, but I want you to talk about the importance of that, because after that, we're going to be talking about the 60s and 70s quite a bit. So, and I want to knock out that 1940 and 1950. So tell us about that.
So 1940 A&M is, it's as basic as it looks on paper. 1939, the Aggies won their only real national title.
How dare you?
Well, how dare they lie? I thought it was part of their honor code. Although they're, you can claim them. Claiming
the Brian, titles. The Brian Penny Saver has awarded Texas A&M 27 national titles.
Claiming national, they call them the mythical national title for a reason. Anyway, 1939 is their real.
They won a real national title.
And it is the only one that they have really, truly contended for, you know, since 1930. So 1940, the Aggies come into town. I don't think they're the number one team, but they're pretty highly ranked, obviously, as being a national champion defending. There was an AP poll at the time, but it didn't exist then. Long story short, Texas holds the defending national champion scoreless in a 7-0 win. And that's just a big deal at that point. You know, that's when, like you mentioned about boxing, horse racing, baseball, the football people cared about was college football just because of their allegiances to their university. And, you know, Texas obviously at that point had a pretty robust alumni system, and probably seeing that ag school from College Station win a national title probably upset what people wanted to see from Dana Bible, who was a former Aggie coach himself. So the fact that they defeat the defending national champion, hold them scoreless, beat them on their way to what was a pretty quality season. They end up playing Florida in a couple of weeks after that, end up 8-2. Come in third, surprisingly, in the Southwest Conference, but still beat the Southwest Conference champion Aggies, beat the defending national titles, beat Great. The team that ends number six in the country.
Very quickly, 1950 SMU, Texas beats them. It's the first time Texas ever defeats a number one ranked team visiting DKR. For those of you who don't know, SMU had a brief epoch where they were a dominant football team, and they didn't have that again until they started paying players for about 4 years. But this is Doak Walker. This is like that lineage of SMU player, Kyle Rote, all these guys that are very famous. Is there anything in 30 seconds you want to say about that game?
Not much about the game. The fact that they beat them 23-20. The funny thing is the head coach was Blair Cherry. And he decided to retire after this season. And the reasons are as follows. Fans criticized them because they didn't win by enough. The local paper printed pages of letters of criticism after losses to Oklahoma. His players received too much attention to where they couldn't focus on games. Other schools negatively recruited Texas. Other teams gave their best effort against Texas. And sports writers created unrealistic expectations in 1950.
74 years ago, and nothing has changed. Amazing.
That's a pretty fun one. But yeah, just, you know, the first ever game at home against a number one team and beat them. So that's always big to beat number one.
All right, so a bit of a history lesson is coming here for a time in the 1960s where Texas is obviously playing very significant football. Every year has big implications, and every game has big implications because these are really good Longhorn teams, but also a little bit of a callback for Arkansas, because they're going to be featured in many of these matchups. One, because we have a neutral with Oklahoma. Two, because A&M was pretty consistently terrible. And although it's hard for people to conceive, they were not considered a primary rival. Certainly Texas fans liked beating them because it meant so much to A&M. That's a lot where the poor Aggies chants used to come from, which is, if you've never heard, it's a lot of fun to hear. I've participated and heard many of them. But Arkansas was a big deal and a huge rival. And Arkansas, for those who don't know, in the 60s and early 70s was a juggernaut. They were awesome. And Texas proceeds to basically prevent three or four Arkansas national titles through the 60s and the early 70s with huge wins over Arkansas in Austin. So let's start. You want to start sort of sequentially in 1962?
Yeah, let's do that one, because this is, again, we already kind of talked about number one and number two. This has a good argument for being a top one. But yeah, I think 1962, the home game against Arkansas. And if you look at the score, it's only 7-0, I think, or 7-3. I should have that up, but let me double
7-3.
7-3, and it is just a knockdown, drag-out game. But Arkansas is up 3-0, and they are driving, and they are driving toward the Texas end zone, and they have a fourth and short. And there's a famous quote, I think it's from Johnny Treadwell, the first great player to wear number 60 at Texas. Everybody kind of talks about Tommy Nobis and Derek, not Derek Johnson, you know, Britt Hager, Brian Jones, just so many different guys who wore number 60. Johnny Treadwell was the guy who wore it before Tommy Nobis, and Johnny Treadwell made one of the most important plays in Texas history. So they're there. It's fourth and goal. Arkansas has the ball, and I think he's credited with the quote with saying, "We have them right where we want them. They have to come right at us." And one of the most famous pictures, you see number 30, or excuse me, you see number 60, that's Johnny Treadwell. You see Pat Culpepper, who I'm trying to make sure I get his number right.
31.
31. They make a tackle on the Arkansas running back and stop him. And it may jar the ball loose as well. Either way, Arkansas does not reach the end zone. Texas then goes on a 7-minute drive all the way down the field to beat Arkansas and really usher in like the start, you know, that you talked about the era of the 60s being when Darryl Royal really had control of the sport. But that game was the real start of it. And it's one of the most important stops in Texas history, just because not only do you, you know, win against Arkansas, you're the number one team at the time, and you defeat the number seven team on your home turf a week after beating Oklahoma 9-6. You know, after running through Oregon, Tech, and Tulane, a huge win. It would be undone slightly the following week, at least in the context of the season, in the form of a tie at Rice. But still, this is really the beginning of the renaissance of Texas football, and it starts with that play that led to that drive, and it has probably one of the most famous pictures in Texas football history as the moment that makes it such a big deal.
Yep, absolutely. That was a big deal. And one of many times Texas is going to break Arkansas's heart. We'll have a few of those later. But I think we want to talk about probably the next year, which is that Texas team finishes number four in the country. They have a great season. The next year, Texas wins the national title. And they have...
We'll save that one. I think that one's number two. Unless you want to go out.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah. Well, if you want, we don't need to do this.
I think that one's number two.
Okay, cool. Well, then let's talk about the birth and the introduction of one of the most influential offenses in college football history, at least for the next decade. And that is the wishbone. 1968, the Texas Longhorns tie the Houston Cougars, and they introduce a newfangled offense led by a former six-string quarterback named James Street. And they get a tie out of it. But after that tie, Texas doesn't lose a football game for 30 games. And they go on an incredible run, and a run that helps to cement Darryl K. Royal's legacy and create a bunch of mythic sort of legends in Texas football history. Let's talk about the birth of the wishbone and that 1968 game. Anything in particular stand out to you?
So, this is the only non-win on this list.
It is a tie. And by the way, Houston in that game outplays Texas.
Exactly. And just for other kind of funny I don't really remember college football with ties. Like, just when my sports consciousness started.
Oh, yeah.
Overtime was a thing. Like, the last year, I think, of ties being a thing was 94, and Texas tied Oklahoma that year. oddly enough, if I remember right. So maybe
I remember
95.
Ties. I have seen Ties. I've been at games that tied. I was at the Texas Syracuse game with John Makovic was the coach for that ended in a tie. And it sucked. It's, you know, as they say, like kissing your sister. So let's talk about one thing that I think bears mentioning. The wishbone that some of you may have seen in the 80s, like OU ran or some other teams still ran, that was not the wishbone of the 60s. It was a triple option, but that triple option actually happened very rarely. A lot of it was power lead, and I'll give you the evidence. James Street is the starting quarterback in a wishbone offense, and he had one carry for negative 5 yards. So the wishbone, as it evolved, became a very quarterback and fullback heavy rushing attack, with the halfbacks kind of getting fewer carries, but usually they were a big pitch and they you know might scamper for 50 yards. The early wishbones, a lot of fullback run, a lot of fullback dives, and a lot of halfback leads. The quarterback was the ball handler and occasionally would carry the ball, certainly, and James Street would carry the ball more, but he wasn't carrying it 14, 16, 12 times a game. That was not a thing.
So, and even think about this, the year before, Texas goes 6-4. They lose to not just Texas A&M, they lose to TCU and to Texas Tech. And they come in, correct me if I'm wrong on this one, they come into the year with a really good problem. They have some really good running backs.
Yep.
They just don't know, you know, from the typical I or, you know, maybe offset formation, how to use them all at the same time. But, you know, they have Chris Gilbert, they have Ted Coy, they have Steve Wooster, and they're like, okay, we got to get these guys on the field. How do we do it? And it was it Mike Campbell, right? Or Ken Dabbs, one of those two, who helped put the offense together.
Well, Emory Ballard.
There,
Mike Campbell was the defensive coordinator.
That's right.
Ken Dabbs was the lead recruiter for Texas.
So Emory Ballard says, let's put them all out there. And, you know, if you watch some film, you can see some great clips. One of the coaches on like film Twitter I follow has the left back go, you know, right, and then the two other ones run like a counter. It's like, I don't know how you follow that. And it's a very strange game. 57 rushes, 297 yards. Texas quarterbacks are 2 of 9 with 4 interceptions. But it's A, the fact that they don't lose, and B, it's the first introduction of the offense that carries Texas from that point on September 21st, 1968, not just to the two national titles that we know that we see in 69 and 70, but also just starts a string of dominance in the Southwest Conference that we get to in a later game from this season.
Yep, absolutely. So that's the birth of the wishbone. Obviously an important game, not a good game by really any stretch of the imagination when James Street throws 4 picks and rushes for negative 5 yards. So not to diminish the Street legend in any way, but I don't think people understand quite what that offense actually was and what really drove it. And it wasn't the quarterback in terms of his performance. It was more his ball handling and his ability to audible and get Texas in the right situations. So just a different type of quarterback back in that day. And it takes some getting used to. All right, let's talk about some more. You want to talk about some more Arkansas heartbreak?
We got, I think we got a couple more, so let's get to the next one.
68.
So this game, if you look at the 68 schedule, obviously it starts with the tie against Houston, and then Texas goes to Texas Tech and loses by 10. So they're 0-1-1. They come back to Austin. They defeat Oklahoma State. They go to Dallas, and they defeat Oklahoma 26-20. In a game between two teams that aren't ranked, which not a regular occurrence for this rivalry, for both Texas and Oklahoma, especially there in the late 60s, to be unranked. Texas wins that game. They hop back in the top 25, and they have to face number 9 Arkansas on October 19th, 1968. Texas wins this game 39-29. Part of the reason that it's big is obviously you beat a top rival at home. You take care of business, pulling up the stats. You have Chris Gilbert go for over 100 yards and two touchdowns. Steve Wooster scores two touchdowns. James Street even passes for a touchdown.
Woo!
But the important thing is that this game is the start, the true start. You know, I guess that Houston game kind of introduced everybody to that offense, but this Arkansas game is the real start of that dominance that Texas had, not just in 68, not just in 69 and 70, but basically all the way almost to 1975. They win 40 of their next 41 Southwest Conference games. They win the Southwest Conference in 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 70, and 73. Lose it in 74, get back in it in 1975. And this was the game that ushered it in. They, you know, dropped that one to Texas Tech at Jones Stadium, and then they bounce back and get on the roll that starts not just their dominance in the Southwest Conference, but also their real contention on a, you know, multi-year basis for the national championship.
Other important factor of this game in 1968, that Arkansas team only lost one game. That was to Texas. They went 10-1. They would have had a, if they had won that game, they would have staked claim to a national title. It's one of many that Texas is going to rob the Hogs of. Let's skip 69. Of course, that happened, the famous road game, the big shootout, Nixon and all that stuff. But let's talk about 1970, because Arkansas wants revenge. They're coming in ready to pummel Texas. And Texas has a new guy running the wishbone. His name is Eddie Phillips. And Eddie Phillips is a weirdly forgotten man in Texas football history because he is a better athlete than James Street. He's a better passer. And he's, in many ways, a better practitioner of the wishbone. But James Street had an undefeated national title winner in 69. In 70, Eddie Phillips is going to bring Texas to an undefeated season, but they're going to lose the bowl game. The bowl games back then, I don't think people fully appreciate. The national champion was awarded before the bowls. The bowl games were kind of an exhibition. Now, you took them very seriously, but they weren't definitive. And it's kind of a weird thing to get your mind around. That doesn't change until like the later 70s when the bowl game gets factored in. So anyway, just something to keep in mind. But Texas plays Arkansas. That team is 9-2. Remember, guys, the 1969 Arkansas team was spectacularly good. This is a phenomenal run for Arkansas football between 68 and 70. And Texas plays spoiler on them. Texas, by now, they've got the wishbone down. And Eddie Phillips is running it like a maestro. Texas wins 42-7. Blows out a 9-2 Arkansas team that would finish in the top 10. Texas rushes for 464 yards and outgains Arkansas 517 to 165. Winning by 35 points is no joke. The game was actually not even that close, and it was an absolute destruction. And if you want to understand why older Arkansas fans just despise Texas, it's not just that 1969 game, the famous shootout in Arkansas. It's all these other games where Texas just humiliates Arkansas and ruins their national title hopes.
So if you look at this schedule, and I think in my mind as like a younger fan who looks and sees national champion bowl loss, sometimes I kind of have this idea, this notion that it's like, oh, this is a little bit sullied by the fact that you lost the bowl. But then now I'm looking at the schedule, and Texas ran through that schedule. They played a close game against another game I think is worth mentioning on this list that we'll get to in a second, against UCLA, and a close game against Baylor. They lost to Notre Dame, and then they just beat the hell out of everybody else. 56-15, 35-13, 41-9, 41-9 over Oklahoma, 45-21, 42-15, 58-0, 52-14 against A&M, and then just this beatdown of Arkansas, that, you know, in part vindicated the game of the century win the year prior, but also, of course, caps an undefeated regular season. And to your point about television broadcasts, this is on December 5th. This is on national TV. It's a top five game. And Texas, you know, scores six touchdowns to Arkansas's one to complete a 10-0 regular season. So this is the game that caps the perfect regular season. Probably what it's the UPI, right, that gave them this national title, earns them that title in the minds of the writers as part of the UPI. And really, you know, obviously, again, a back-to-back national champion, is this is the game that really seals it.
Yep. A little postscript to Eddie Phillips, just to kind of show you what kind of athlete he was. He played quarterback, of course, for Texas. He had at the time and persisted for many years, some of them until Vince Young. He held all the Texas rushing records for quarterbacks. He was also a very effective passer, kind of a deep passer, which we'll talk about in a second. He ends up getting drafted to the NFL, not as a quarterback, but as a safety. And he is playing in a preseason game, and he snaps his neck on a tackle, breaks his neck. He doesn't end up in a wheelchair, I think, thank God, but that ends his football career tragically. But it does give you an idea of how athletic he was. You know, he was drafted to play NFL safety, and they just drafted him based on pure athletic potential. So interesting guy. And let's talk about another game that this leads into.
Yeah, so this is the 1970 UCLA game. I put that one on there. It's a little bit peculiar because this UCLA team kind of ends up fizzling out. But at the time, they were number 13. And it's, you know, this is at a time where these interregional games really grab a lot of attention. So Texas had beaten Cal. They'd beaten Texas Tech. It was the first ranked matchup for the year. And this was really the way that, again, the Longhorns were able to show that they're on the path towards beating these great teams and going and winning another national title. One of the big plays on this one, this is a very close game. It's 20-17, and it takes a game-winning touchdown reception from Eddie Phillips to Cotton Spryer with about 12 seconds left for the Longhorns to win this one. And that's at the end of a very fast drive. Six plays, 51 yards, and 46 seconds. That's crazy just in that time. It's crazy in almost any time to go that far in that amount of time. But thinking of the wishbone, where they have to move quickly. I'm sure there were timeouts taken. I don't have the exact play-by-play. But Texas has to get down there and get down there fast. And they are able to, and they win the game. Happy Feller gives them the kick. UCLA can't do anything with the ensuing time they have left. And Texas is able to overcome a comeback effort by the Bruins. They entered halftime up 13-3. UCLA scores 14 in the third quarter. Texas makes that last second touchdown pass, and it really kickstarts their national title search in 1970.
Yep, the pass itself is a 45-yard touchdown pass from Phillips to Spire. 12 seconds left, as Joe said. It was 3rd and 19. And pretty clutch play that basically saved the season. You know, Texas broke the wishbone, which was a big deal, and basically just threw down the field and won the game. And if you watch the throw, it's a post route, and he's double covered. And it's a great catch and a great throw. And it was clutch. And that's what James Street was kind of known for. And there were questions about, hey, we know Eddie Phillips is a superior athlete, but is he going to come up in these big clutch moments the way James Street always did? And the answer was, yeah, there was something going on there that these Texas quarterbacks who barely threw the ball would come up with these big passes. And it happened again and again for DKR, hilariously. Even some of his early 60s teams, you had big passing performances just out of the blue in big games. And it kind of was a characteristic of DKR, which is kind of funny. All right, what's our next one?
We got to go back to the first national championship team.
And 1963.
As I look through some of the first recognized, because if you go the Aggie metric or the Alabama metric, I guess, as well, You can claim a few more national titles if you're a Texas fan, or but if you're
part of being a Texas fan is we don't claim bullshit titles.
Exactly. You don't claim titles where you were, you know, finished 17th in the AP poll.
Or your team was 7-3.
Yeah, exactly. So we go all the way to 1963. We had talked about 1962 Arkansas with Treadwell and Culpepper making the stop. Texas wins the Southwest Conference that year, and it sets up for a really strong 1963 season. Of course, I think this is because freshmen couldn't play. This is Tommy Nobis's first season playing regular snaps. And Texas starts the year ranked number 5. They beat Tulane. They beat Tech. They beat Oklahoma State. They have a first, I guess you could say, game of the century where they beat Oklahoma. They the number 2 Longhorns, beat number 1 Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl 28-7. So they win that game. They vault themselves into the number 1 spot. Then they play just a slew of close games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of their final 6 games are one possession games.
Yep, one touchdown or less is the victory margin.
And the biggest game is the one against Baylor. And it is just a, you know, like we talked about, a slog of a game. They have to get through the rest of the Southwest Conference teams that know they're ranked number 1. And Texas takes a 7-0 lead. I'm trying to figure out at what point in time they do it. But they have a 7-0 lead. I'll get it in just a second. It is the result of a 1-yard run with 1:55 left in the third quarter. So they hold a 7-0 lead entering the fourth quarter. And at the very end of the game, Baylor is driving. And, you know, there were some times in the 50s and 60s when Baylor had hopped up, and this is a Baylor team that ends up 8-3 and goes to the Blue Bonnet Bowl and defeats LSU, you know, one of the better, you know, Baylor teams until Art Briles gets there. But Baylor's driving, and Baylor's driving to win. They want to, you know, take the lead against they probably want to go for 2 against the Longhorns, win 8-7. And there's a pass that is, I'm assuming it's from Don Troll because he's the main quarterback on the sports reference page. And it's in the end zone. And Duke Carlisle, who at that point was a quarterback, was the quarterback for the Longhorns, plays one play of safety. And that one play where he's at safety is a game-saving interception in the end zone that keeps Texas national championship hopes alive. Obviously, they go on to beat TCU 17-0. They beat the Aggies 15-13. And then, of course, they play number 1 versus number 2 again on January 1st in the Cotton Bowl against Navy and against, obviously, Roger Staubach, a great team there. But that game is what not only keeps Texas hopes alive, but it keeps his hopes alive at home. And it also just has an awesome moment of the quarterback coming in to play one snap and making the game-saving play.
Yeah, so it was not uncommon for teams to have guys playing both ways back then, but it was select, and there were different substitution rules. Duke Carlisle had played defensive back prior in his career. That season, he played, as Joe said, a snap at safety. And the safety they took out was a guy, Hudson, who I think was like an all-Southwest Conference player. And Mike Campbell, who was the defensive coordinator then, didn't really have an explanation for why he did it, but he just felt good about Duke Carlisle in that instant. And he puts him in. Carlisle gets the interception, saves the season, and the crowd goes wild. So a pretty significant game, and of course led directly to a Texas national title against a pretty good Baylor team. I think we got one more to do.
We have, I think, the number 1. I think that one's number 2. I think this one is, there's some, I don't think, well, I, let me, how do I phrase this? I don't think this is a very difficult choice to make as far as the number 1 moment, the most important game in the history of DKR, Texas Memorial Stadium. And it is the 1998 Texas A&M game, the one where Ricky Williams breaks the record, the all-time rushing record held by Tony Dorsett, with Tony Dorsett on the sidelines, with Ricky's mom there. Obviously, they beat a A&M team that was having a far better season, 10-2, or they ended up. They are entering that game in a good position in the Southwest Conference, and Texas kind of plays upset. The record happens really early on a, what was it, a 60-yard run there with 1 minute 45 left in the first quarter. The big moment happens. You know, Tony Dorsett comes out. Brent Musburger has the historic call. But something that's often forgotten about this game, yeah, Ricky had the 60-yard run. Yeah, you know, he had 272 yards. He had three fumbles. And Ricky Williams, in this crowning moment, almost kind of cost Texas and would have really spoiled this game if it weren't for Major Applewhite. Major has one of the best games of his career. He's 24 of 35. He has a touchdown and an interception, and he leads a final game-winning drive. Randy McCown sneaks it in, puts the Aggies up 24-23 with just over 2 minutes left. They had actually made a little bit of a comeback effort. Texas was up 23-7, and the Aggies stormed back in the fourth quarter. But thanks to an 11-play drive, really ushered by Major and also with some obvious help from Ricky, they set up Chris Stockton for a 24-yard field goal. He hits it. Texas wins 26-24, and you have the element of obviously beating the Aggies in Mack Brown's first year as part of, you know, a successful season after the failings at the end of the Mackovic era. And it also includes the crowning achievement of the 1998 and maybe even the 90s for the Longhorns and Ricky Williams in his senior year, breaking the record, getting that, you know, that billboard, proving it right, and winning the second Heisman in program history in front of a packed crowd.
Yeah, this game was probably emblematic of the rejuvenation of Texas football. And that's the most important thing, other than the incredible record setting. It caps off an incredible career. Ricky rushes for 6,279 yards and 72 touchdowns. That season, he rushed for over 2,100 yards. He had another 260 yards receiving. In that A&M game, as Joe mentioned, he rushed for 259 on 44 carries, which may be linked to the fumbles. Ricky was heavily used that year, let's just say. They took some tread off the tire. But an incredible game, obviously a win over a very good Aggie team, really defensively especially. There were some really good dudes on that Texas A&M football team. And it was just the beginning of what was going to be a decade of Texas being arguably the team of the 2000s. And, you know, I think some people would argue USC, but USC didn't finish out that decade great. So, you know, anyway, it's just a huge game on many levels. The star power, the rejuvenation of the program, the launching of this great decade of Mack Brown, you know, through 2009, just incredible football. You know, when Texas lost during that time period, it was always kind of shocking. Like, you know, whereas I can tell you in the 90s or in the 80s, the late 80s, it was not shocking. Texas fell and fell to a level where, you know, it was kind of dispiriting. And then that's why that Ricky Williams season, him returning that senior year to reach all of his goals, because he should have gone to the NFL. I mean, nowadays he would have been like almost forced to go to the NFL after his junior year, but it was a different incentive system back then. And Ricky really cared about college football and he cared about legacy and he loved Texas and he believed in Mack Brown. So awesome game. And I think the most important game at home in Texas history in terms of what it meant for the next decade, not necessarily that season. Is that fair?
Yeah. And in a couple, I guess, footnotes, but that also have proven to be somewhat of a big deal. The season before, 1997, Ricky's a Heisman finalist. He either finishes third or fifth. Texas expanded the stadium. They added suites to the west side.
Oh, yeah.
That means the money people are showing up. More and more are. Joe Gemmell gave money to have the field named after him at the time. Route 66 happens. He wants to take it off. But then the following year before Ricky, they add seats to that upper deck on the east side. I'm sorry. So the east side has all these, you know, this not just grandstands, but now suites to where 80,000 people come to Texas games. And it used to be, you know, what, 65,000, maybe 66,000 on a big game. Now you can fit 80, 81, 82. And in that first season they can do that, they have the Heisman Trophy winner there, which then again speaks to the rejuvenation. People want to get involved. People are excited to be a part of it. Those suites are always filled. Joe Gemmell wants his name on the field after that point. So it's a little bit of a small detail, but as we're kind of talking about this being the 100th anniversary, that was a big deal because it made those additions needed. It made those additions part of further additions, where in, like, you know, 2005, and you can speak to Vince Young on this point, and I think they had made the decision by that time when he goes through and has his spectacular season in 05, but right after they win the national title, Texas welcomes number one Ohio State. They're expanding the stadium again. They're adding, they're redoing that north end zone. They're now, you know, heading into these next couple of years. Steve Sarkisian has a fully renovated south end zone. Like, a lot of these watershed moments in Texas history lead into or are needed to really make the university feel like, okay, we did the right thing when they're expanding the stadium. Speaks to Texas football interest, I feel like. And you could definitely argue that Ricky Williams having that season led or put the foundation down for Darrell K. Royal Texas Memorial Stadium now to be the 100,000 seat palace we know it today.
Yeah, and I think to presage what's going to happen with the SEC, with the schedule that Texas is going to be playing, the days of top five opponents being a somewhat rarity coming into Texas, not just because of the OU neutral and also, you know, just sort of how the way things have fallen. I mean, obviously the big game at Ohio State, that was huge, but it just doesn't always happen at Texas. That's over. I mean, every year Texas is going to play a top five football team, at least one. And often they're going to be hosting the number one team in the country, whether that's Georgia or LSU or whoever, how the schedule falls, that is going to be commonplace. And I think if we redo this list in 5 years, or 10 years, I think we'll be shocked at how many games of the last 5 or 10 years that we're going to be talking about, because, you know, games like Georgia, which are going to happen this year, those are circled on the calendar. And of course, you know, you've got these incredible games like Michigan, Ohio State, which are going to return as well. So I think even non-con and con, you're going to have very significant games happening in DKR from here on out. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
And most importantly, we have good reason to believe now maybe Texas is that number one team.
No doubt. No doubt about that. Very possible. We'll see. Check back with us in late September. And we'll be able to tell you that more definitively. But that has been this coverage. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Where you disagree, it's all good, because frankly, it's all about how you value things, or, you know, we just tried to go through and honestly kind of also give a little bit of a history lesson, because one of the cool things about being a Texas fan is understanding that there's a pretty rich heritage that happened before, and Texas football was not invented by Mack Brown. You know, despite it being called Mack Brown Texas Football, the original, the old website, there was a bunch of football that happened before then. And even DKR, there was significant football that happened before him, and there was significant football that happened in between. Fred Akers, I mentioned some of those honorable mention games. Texas had many number two finishes during that period where we just couldn't quite get there, and they featured some really good games against both non-con, like the Miami-Auburn thing we talked about, but also in conference, you know, in the 70s. Arkansas, still a power. You know, some really great games. So anyway, there's a long heritage of Texas football. We think these were the games that were the most important, not always the most entertaining, as the 68 Houston game inclusion would testify. But these are the things that you see the worms about to turn. And I think we're fortunate to be at a time period of Texas football where I think we've seen the worm turn in a positive direction. And I think we're about to have an enjoyable next few years of Texas football. Anything you want to say in parting, Joe?
You got it all.
All right, my man. Hey, I really appreciate you for bringing up this idea. And I know all of you, I hopefully as listeners, will enjoy it. And one thing I did want to mention in parting, if you're someone who's interested in talking about the wealth of Texas football and its wealth of history, you should listen to this podcast. But if you want to manage your wealth and increase it, you need to call David McClellan. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. He is a principal of Forum Financial and just really good at what he does. A multi-national championship swimmer at the University of Texas. He knows a little something about winning titles and not big games, but big meets. And David is a guy who's very, very experienced in the financial industry and just really sharp. Just give him a call. It's no pressure. And frankly, he'll be evaluating you as much as you're evaluating him. He's got a really great select list of clients. And he's the guy that you want involved in your financial life if you're trying to build wealth or preserve wealth. Call him, 312-933-8823. And I want to thank all of our great sponsors in supporting this podcast. Hope you guys will support them. For Joe Cook, I am Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em. Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. And you can reach him at 832-557-1095. Or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that are frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.